KCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This week on Viewpoints.
It was just like throwing a bomb into the educational system. It quickly ruined so much, and they've taken no responsibility for this.
Are students using AI to cheat their way through school? Then,
we think of JFK and we think of RFK. We think of the Kennedys of the past and the roles that they played and the tragedies that they've faced.
Uncovering the Kennedys you've heard little about. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Light a candle, pour some wine. Grab a roll, the soft kind for a little me time. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear. Wavy edges for my rear. So let the softness caress your soul. Just relax, you're on a roll. Let her rip. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear.
Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear has the same softness you love. Now with wavy edges that tear better than the leading one-ply brand. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Progressive knows when you're in your RV, you're already on vacation. That's when you become Vacation You, who just camped where there's absolutely no shade. Even though regular you burns easily. In fact, Vacation You burns too, but is too stubborn to admit it, which is why regular you gets in trouble at the dermatologist, because Vacation You doesn't do doctors. So bundle your RV with your home or auto policy and earn an automatic discount from Progressive. And spend the savings on the both of you. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
In high schools, colleges, and universities across the country, educators are facing an epidemic, a cheating epidemic. With generative AI tools like Gemini, Claude, and most notably ChatGPT easily accessible, it's an uphill battle to get students to stay focused, let alone do their homework. While ChatGPT has only been publicly available for a few years, it's already done tremendous damage to the education system. Michael Long, a high school English teacher in the Chicago suburbs, estimates that 30 to 40% of his students use AI to do the brunt of their work for them, and it's only getting harder to tell what's written by a human and what's not.
And at the beginning, it was pretty clear to tell what was written with AI and what wasn't, whereas now, in the stage that ChatGPT is at, you can still generally tell, but it's much harder to discern.
As ChatGPT use becomes more frequent and more problematic, teachers and professors have put in place policies restricting AI usage. One tactic that's become popular is the use of blue books for in-class quizzes and exams. These simple books pose open-ended questions, forcing students to handwrite a longer answer that shows their unique thought process. In Long's classroom, his policy is that AI tools are strictly off-limits for major projects. But for smaller assignments, it's sometimes allowed to help with items like structuring a paper or checking grammar, as long as AI isn't doing all the work. While he recognizes that AI can be helpful, it's easy to abuse. Overall, he's seen a concerning decline in student engagement and work ethic.
I'd say students are a little less engaged. I think knowing that they have this tool to fall back on, it kind of lowers the stakes of maybe major assignments, major assessments, and they maybe feel like they don't have to tune in as deeply or as thoroughly as before. And especially in my subject of English, students are starting to lose sight of the value of reading and writing, which is kind of crazy to think. But if there's this machine that can do all their reading and writing work for them, some students might think, why should I spend my time learning these skills?
High school is a crucial time for students to develop their critical thinking skills and expand on reading and writing comprehension. Long is concerned that students who depend on AI to write essays or understand reading assignments won't be prepared for the demands of college-level work. In high school, it's easier for teachers to identify when a person is struggling and get them more help. In college, that support is much harder to provide.
I think that students are becoming a little bit more prone to taking a quick or easy way out of an assignment instead of putting in some hard or rigorous work to get to the learning. And so in high school, our job is to do everything to make sure that our students are learning and don't fail. So I do get concerned for college, where the professors maybe don't really care as much if students pass or fail. And so they'll get to this higher education level and maybe won't be able to do the high level work that's being demanded of them.
And colleges are seeing this already. Brian Green, Director of Technology Ethics at the Markela Center for Applied Ethics at Santa Clara University, has also noticed big shifts in his classroom since the launch of ChatGPT. Similar to Long, he's seen shorter attention spans and less engagement. But he's even more concerned about the long-term impact of students graduating school without the skills they need to succeed.
One of the things I like to tell my students is, if they've been using AI to replace them in school, they should be prepared to be replaced by AI in the workplace, because ultimately they're writing themselves out of their own education. And by doing that, they're kind of writing themselves out of their own job. Ultimately, they need to be able to think for themselves. That's the reason that people get hired for doing things, is because they have talents, not because they can just get AI to do everything for them.
A recent Wall Street Journal survey found that 89% of college students have used ChatGPT to complete a homework assignment. Not only is this bad for individuals, but it has broader societal implications. What happens when a generation of doctors, engineers, and scientists use AI to cheat through critical parts of their training?
People need to grow up. People need to be able to fulfill those roles in society. If we don't have enough people to get society to operate, then society starts deteriorating. If we don't get enough doctors who know what they're doing, then you get more medical mistakes. If you don't get enough electrical engineers or electricians or other people who can make the electrical grid work, then you're going to have blackouts. If you don't get enough people who know how the sewage system works or the water system works, then you're going to have problems with those systems. And ultimately, society just starts falling apart. We need to raise up individuals who can replace the older generation. As the older generation gets old and retires and eventually is not around anymore to run the world, we need to make sure that young people are equipped to step into those places.
Green adds that it's important for students to step up and realize the value of really learning and understanding the material. However, they're not the only ones that need to take accountability. As a tech ethicist, he believes that OpenAI, the parent company of ChatGPT, and other developers should do more to restrict student access to their platforms.
OpenAI released ChatGPT right before finals, you know, just a couple years ago, and right before college essays were due for people who were applying to college. And it was just like throwing a bomb into the educational system. It quickly ruined so much, and they've taken no responsibility for this. This is something that they caused. It should be something that they try to clean up. They have not tried to clean it up. They've done some tiny little attempts, but if anything, they're trying to make it worse by selling their stuff as something that's useful for educational purposes. And in some cases it is, it can be useful for education, but for the most part, it's really just a kind of a mess that they've created.
Some potential benefits include writing assistance, like Long uses in his classroom, as well as virtual tutoring and exam prep. But before ChatGPT and other software can become truly effective tools for learning, Green says there need to be some major changes.
What I would like to see happen is some sort of restriction which says that you can't use AI for particular kinds of assignments, or you can't access AI unless you have a reason to be accessing it. Or there's got to be some centralized database that's collecting all of these responses so that you can check what's turned in class with what was made by a generative AI system. There are a lot of solutions here. Nobody seems to be interested in it because what they're trying to do is make money, and they are going to try to sell this as much as they can. And it doesn't matter if the student's cheating with it or not, as long as they're making money as a company.
Considering OpenAI reportedly made $3.7 billion in revenue last year, Green isn't optimistic they or other tech companies will step in. In the meantime, he's replaced written assignments with 10-minute conversations with each student in his class. And even in the long run, putting up guardrails against AI misuse may be destined to fail unless young people understand the benefits of taking the hard road. Green argues that the most effective solution is to make students actually want to learn.
The main thing to do is to remember why you're in a university in the first place. If you're a student, you should have a sense of goal orientation, that you need to learn this material if you're going to go forward in your life. So keep your eyes on what you're there for. If there are other people cheating around you, then try to explain to them, you know, this is not good for you. You're wasting your education this is not what life is all about. If you're a teacher, you should be making the same argument, right? Which is that this is ultimately not what your education is for.
To find out more about Michael Long, Brian Green, and all our featured guests, visit viewpointsradio.org. For more behind the scenes, check out Viewpoints Radio on X, Facebook, and Instagram. This segment was written and produced by Grace Galante. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Studio production by Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, from poor Irish immigrants to a generational dynasty, the Kennedy legacy, when Viewpoints returns.
Father's Day is Sunday, and if you haven't found a gift yet, don't panic. Just come to Macy's Father's Day sale for gifts that'll make Dad say, "This is perfect." Shop designer polos from Lacoste and Tommy Hilfiger, 30 to 50% off. Watches from Citizen and Bulova, 30% off. Fragrance gift sets, boxed and ready to give. Even a 36-piece Cuisinart grill set, now half off. Hurry in. Father's Day is this Sunday, and this sale is happening now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Another checkup? Why are so many people getting new puppies?
Dr. Kim's veterinary office is littered with cuteness.
We are booked solid for weeks, but who can say no to a puppy, right? Oh, good boy.
She needs to find extra vet techs to get those pups some extra love.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. When you sponsor a job on Indeed, candidates can find it easier, so you can hire easier. Redeem your $75 credit at Indeed.com/credit. Terms and conditions apply.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places that I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times? You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2024 Nielsen report.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
It's been more than 60 years since President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Despite only serving in office for 3 years, JFK is one of the most popular presidents in American history. The young, stylish icon had a natural knack for politics, leadership, and represented a sense of country and idealism that inspired millions. But these traits alone weren't what propelled JFK into the public sphere. The Kennedy name was a big driving force in the 20th century. To be a Kennedy meant you were destined for big things. The prominent East Coast family was known across the nation for their dominance in business, public service, and politics. Today, the Kennedy name still perseveres in American politics. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the nephew of President John F. Kennedy, was recently appointed and confirmed as the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services.
They were raised with this sensibility that they are here to serve, to give back. They were all born wealthy. Joe was born wealthy. His kids were born extremely wealthy. So they didn't necessarily need to work, at least not, you know, a regular job. I think their sense of what they could and should do with their lives was to give back in different ways, whether politically or otherwise.
That's Neil Thompson, a journalist and the author of The First Kennedys, The Humble Roots of an American Dynasty. Thompson says that it's no secret that the family has dealt with their fair share of past controversies and tragedies.
There are a lot of things you can criticize. There are a lot of flaws. They, you know, many of them exhibited their flaws very publicly across time. But the one thing they did do is give back and serve, and in particular with a focus on those in need. I do think the Kennedys did have a sense of helping those who needed help.
While public service is a key trait of their legacy, another aspect is the classic image of this elite family. Many portraits display large get-togethers where everyone is dressed to the nines, enjoying parties or summer getaways along the picturesque beaches of the East Coast. This was especially true in the 20th century, when the family commanded immense recognition, power, and privilege. However, it wasn't always this way. So much has been covered about the Kennedys at their peak. But how did they get there? Who started it all? It's rarely mentioned that the Kennedy name, just a few generations before JFK, meant nothing. The first descendants, Bridget Murphy and Patrick Kennedy, were simply poor Irish immigrants seeking a better life. Thompson says the couple both grew up in rural southeastern Ireland and had spent much of their lives working in agriculture. But when the potato famine hit Ireland in 1845 and continued to worsen, life became very hard.
For Bridget Murphy and Patrick Kennedy, they were slightly better off than some of the other farm families across the island, especially in the West, which got hit harder by the potato famine. But still, it upended their lives completely, for sure. They did sort of live under the threat of eviction. I found evidence that their landlord was a little bit more gracious than some others and didn't threaten to kick them out when they were a little bit late on the rent, which happened often. But it did trigger early on, and then increasingly over the late 1840s, this mass escape from Ireland. And Bridget and Patrick were part of that escape.
While the U.S. was a symbol of hope and great opportunity, many fleeing refugees faced a different reality upon arrival. In the mid-19th century, there was a lot of anti-Irish sentiment as hundreds of thousands of Irish immigrants flooded into America. Bridget and Patrick were just a couple of many who chose to settle down in Boston. Bridget began working as a maid, while Patrick became a barrel maker. But it wasn't a comfortable life by any means. Poverty and disease ran rampant.
So Bridget and Patrick lived in East Boston, married in 1849, started raising a family, had two daughters, but then lost their first son, the first John F. Kennedy, who died at 20 months because many of the neighborhoods where these Irish immigrants lived were unhygienic and full of disease, and people died in very large numbers, children and adults. In fact, the life expectancy for first generation child of an Irish immigrant was 5 years. And in Bridget's case, she raised three daughters, lost her first son at 20 months, but managed to have another son, PJ, and kept all four of those children alive beyond that 5 year terrible life expectancy.
Bridget's other children survived these conditions, but her husband Patrick died in 1858 from tuberculosis at the age of 35. Now a widow and single mother of four, she worked hard to provide for her family. Over the next 10 years, she climbed the ladder at different jobs, learning several new skills along the way.
In time, decided to go into business for herself, and she opened her own grocery store sometime around the end of the Civil War in East Boston, which was truly a remarkable feat because there weren't many female business owners at that time, and even fewer were female Irish immigrant widows. So for her to open her own business and have that business succeed, a business that she owned for the rest of her life, caps off this remarkable ascent for this woman who came poor with nothing, faced hardship after hardship with the loss of her son and then her husband, but shows this ambition and grit and tenacity and savvy and becomes kind of a community fixture. In time, she was able to buy the building where her grocery store was occupied and then bought the building next to that and became, remarkably to me, a landlord, leasing out the apartments above to incoming Irish immigrants. Two of those immigrants became her sons-in-law. So she became a very well-known and trusted and respectable neighborhood business leader.
From nothing, Bridget was able to carve out a name in America for her children and future generations. One of her sons, PJ Kennedy, would go on to be a successful businessman and prominent Massachusetts politician, beginning the Kennedys' long reign in politics.
His success really does set the family up for what is about to come in the 20th century. You know, other histories of the Kennedys focus on Joe Kennedy, JFK's father, RFK's father, and the successes that he had in business. But it really all started with PJ, you know, not just his political success, but his business success, and not just in the saloon and liquor business, but he went into banking, he got involved in real estate, he was part owner of a coal company. He was just wildly successful at anything he got involved in, and gave those skills to his son, Joe, who chose not to get involved in politics, but was a huge success in business. And then in turn, pushed his own children to get involved in politics or public service.
One of those children he pushed was John F. Kennedy, who would become a U.S. Senator and then president in 1961. While the Kennedy men had many triumphs, it's important to remember that without the perseverance of Bridget Murphy Kennedy, the Kennedy name would be far less predominant today. To find out more about this topic and our guest, Neil Thompson, visit viewpointsradio.org. Also, check out his book, The First Kennedys, The Humble Roots of an American Dynasty, available online and in bookstores now. For more behind the scenes, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment originally aired in April 2022 and was written and produced by Amira Zavery. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
On your period, sudden gushes happen without warning. But now you can say goodbye to stand-up gush fears. Thanks to Always Ultra Thins with Rapid Dry technology. It absorbs gushes 2 times faster than the leading store brand and gives you up to 100% leak-free protection. Hello clean and comfortable. With Always, fear no gush.
Still getting around to that fix on your car? You got this. On eBay, you'll find millions of parts guaranteed to fit. Doesn't matter if it's a major engine repair or your first time swapping your windshield wipers. eBay has that part you need, ready to click perfectly into place. For changes big and small, loud or quiet, find all the parts you need at prices you'll love, guaranteed to fit every time. But you already know that. eBay, things, people, love. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. Americans are more hopped up on caffeine than ever. Whether it's coffee or energy drinks, there are endless brands and brews to choose from. Energy drinks in particular have grown in popularity over the last 10 years among adolescents, young adults, and middle-aged adults. Many of these beverages come in a variety of fruity flavors and often build themselves as clean energy. But just how much caffeine lies inside? Bang Energy packs 300 milligrams of caffeine into 16 fluid ounces. That one serving equals about 3 cups of caffeine. Another popular brand, Celsius, offers a special variety called Celsius Heat, which has 300 milligrams of caffeine, but in a smaller 10-ounce serving. The drink is marketed as a great pre-workout option for gym-goers. The takeaway? Many of these newer energy products are normalizing a higher caffeine intake to keep consumers hooked. For instance, Red Bull, which has been sold in the U.S. since 1996, only has 111 milligrams of caffeine per 12 ounces. That's much lower than what's in a regular can of Celsius or Prime. For the average adult, the Food and Drug Administration recommends a max amount of 400 milligrams of caffeine per day. Consuming more than this can cause harsh side effects like anxiety, jitters, headaches, and heart palpitations. Currently, there's no formal cap on how much caffeine manufacturers can add into one drink. So, the next time you need a little pick-me-up, make sure to check the label. The caffeine content is usually listed on the side right next to the nutrition info. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. Do you have a Letterboxd account? Do you know what a Letterboxd account is? In case you don't know, Letterboxd is an online film cataloging app similar to Goodreads, but for tracking movies instead of books. As of January of this year, Letterboxd has more than 17 million users on its app, making lists, giving star ratings, and logging the date they watch movies in their diary. I am, of course, one of those 17 million users, having meticulously maintained my own Letterboxd since 2016. There are many joys of using an app like Letterboxd or Goodreads, including the amount of discovery they can provide. I've spent many a rainy day trolling around Letterboxd, finding users with similar movie tastes as mine, and then looking at what their favorite movies are to fill in some blind spots in my viewing history, whether that means seeking out an old noir film or an 80s movie from Peter Weir. Every Letterboxd profile can display four favorites at the top of their page, and the app itself has sent correspondents to film premieres and award shows in recent years to ask actors and filmmakers what their four favorites are. For example, Ethan Hawke shouted out Do the Right Thing, Paris, Texas, Reds, and All That Jazz, while Iowa Debris's top four includes The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Notting Hill, Phantom Thread, and Babe. Now, I'm not suggesting this is need-to-know knowledge for anyone to have, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't find it interesting, and if it didn't make me want to finally see Reds or go rewatch Phantom Thread. And that's the beauty of Letterboxd. You can go in to log what you just watched and then log out with three more things you want to watch soon. I'm Evan Rook.
Father's Day is Sunday, and if you haven't found a gift yet, don't panic. Just come to Macy's Father's Day sale for gifts that'll make dad say, "This is perfect." Shop designer polos from Lacoste and Tommy Hilfiger, 30 to 50% off. Watches from Citizen and Bulova, 30% off. Fragrance gift sets, boxed and ready to give. Even a 36-piece Cuisinart grill set, now half off. Hurry in. Father's Day is this Sunday, and this sale is happening now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
So, what's your boat? A boat for fishing, a boat for skiing, a pontoon boat for partying? Or are you thinking personal watercraft? Whatever floats fun for you, remember CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union, the leader in financing summer fun. Motorcycles, ATVs, campers, motorhomes, and convertibles too. Great rates, great service, great fun. Local lenders lending local money. Quick and easy loan approval. It's the way financing should be. Stop in and visit with a CCU lender today. CCU can set you up with great rate financing approval, so when you find your boat, you're ready to float. Summer's just too short not to enjoy every moment you can on the water, on the road, or off the road camping or ATVing. Stop in, call, or apply online at ccuwausau.com for your great rate. Whatever floats summer fun for you, remember CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union. We finance fun.
We are the NFHS. That stands for the National Federation of State High School Associations. But really, what we stand for, together with the WIAA, are the 178,000 high school sports students in Wisconsin. And so we stand. We stand for the runners, soccer, and basketball players. We stand for their coaches, administrators, and officials. We stand for the swimmers, football players, and wrestlers. We stand for the golfers, softball, and volleyball players. We stand as the national leader and advocate for high school athletics and all who participate in them and make them possible. Because it is our purpose to ensure that high school students get to play, perform, and compete together. To learn more about who we are and what we stand for, visit nfhs.org.
This week on Viewpoints.
She did recall one time seeing a beautiful apple down in the cellar, and she took it and ate it and just received a terrible beating as a result.
The traumatic legacy of Indian boarding schools. Then,
the only people who don't have regrets are 5-year-olds, people with brain damage, and sociopaths. The rest of us have regrets.
Understanding the gut-wrenching feeling of regret. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Well, these polymers aren't as flexible as Batch K3.
Researcher Laurie is stretched thin.
Did you get the vulcanization analytics from V66? Wait, are these rubber scores from last week?
She needs to hire new lab technicians so she can bounce back into her old self.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Our matching platform lets you spend less time searching and more time connecting with candidates. Redeem your $75 credit at Indeed.com/credit. Terms and conditions apply.
Ethnic cleansing is often seen as a tragedy that happens far from American soil. Massacres like the Holocaust, the Rwandan genocide, or the ongoing Rohingya crisis in Myanmar. We Americans might shake our heads and point fingers at these countries, but we're not immune to these atrocities. In the late 1800s, thousands of Native American children, some as young as 5 years old, were taken from their homes and forced into boarding schools. Not only were they separated from their parents and tribes, but they were stripped of their native identities and languages. And this wasn't just about assimilation. It was an organized attempt to systematically erase indigenous culture.
It was considered sort of a bloodless response to the quote-unquote Indian problem in the United States, which was their interference with westward expansion. And the thought was through various assimilative policies that that would make it easier, and that is to take away their heritage and their language.
That's Mary Annette Pember, a citizen of the Red Cliff Ojibwe tribe and a national correspondent for ICT News, formerly known as Indian Country Today. She's also the author of Medicine River, a story of survival and the legacy of Indian boarding schools. In her book, she uncovers how these schools were the first step of a larger plan.
Sending Native students to boarding schools was preceded by other far-reaching assimilationist policies like Indian removal from their lands and allotment, which was the goal was to create private landowners. And what it ended up doing was really separating Native peoples from their ability to survive and feed their families, and arguably, you know, had a greater impact than any of the other assimilationist style policies.
The boarding school policy wasn't a blip in history. It lasted for 150 years. Together, the federal government and the Catholic Church ran over 400 of these schools across the country and housed tens of thousands of Native children. Official reports estimate that about 1,000 children died and were buried on school grounds. However, Pember and other Native Americans argue that this number is far larger, pushing into the tens of thousands. The common causes for death were starvation, tuberculosis, and broken hearts. One of the first federal boarding schools was the Carlisle Indian Industrial School in Pennsylvania. Former Civil War Lieutenant Richard Henry Pratt founded it in 1879. His motto was, "Kill the Indian in him and save the man." This principle was adopted across the entire boarding school system. The barbaric practices of this system resulted in long-lasting generational trauma that still has an effect today. Pember's mother, Bernice, entered an Indian boarding school at age 5.
My mother would tell me about her life at the boarding school on the Bad River Reservation in Wisconsin. And the school was St. Mary's Catholic Indian Boarding School that was run by a Franciscan order of nuns called the Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. And people in the reservation called it the Sister School. My mother told me the Sister School stories from my earliest memory, and always somehow embedded in the telling was the expectation that I would write about it and I would tell the world about her experience and, you know, as a path towards redemption.
The children spent their days doing chores and were typically given very little to eat. Pember says her mother recalls always being hungry.
My mother often told me about the Mother Superior, Sister Catherine, who was pretty brutal in her discipline. And she did recall one time seeing a beautiful apple down in the cellar, and she took it and ate it and just received a terrible beating as a result. But Sister Catherine was uniquely brutal in her discipline of the children, and the kids really feared her and hated her. And my mother would often tell me a story about one Christmas season when Mother Superior, Sister Catherine, fell down the cellar steps and basically, you know, hit her head and died. And she would say to me, "Oh, what a secret cheer us children did. It was the best Christmas gift we ever got."
Growing up, Pember never knew whether these family stories were completely true. Now, as an investigative reporter, she spent many hours verifying these firsthand accounts. To do so, she traveled to the archival library at Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where many of these records live.
I was looking at the records for St. Mary's Indian Boarding School, and I happened upon a administrative correspondence between the sister secretary of St. Mary's School and the commissioner at the Bureau of Indian Affairs, at the Bureau of Catholic Indian Missions in Washington, D.C. And the letter to the commissioner says, "Well, you know, by the time you receive this letter, our sister, Catherine, will likely have met her maker."
The letter continued with details of Sister Catherine's death, the same story Pember heard from her mother.
So I was alone in this big reading room at Marquette University at the Rainer Collection, and I stood straight up out of my chair when I read that. You know, it was kind of like my family's personal smoking gun, validating everything I'd been told as a child.
Looking back, Pember's own childhood was scarred from the trauma her mom endured as a child. Her mom had severe depression and often wasn't present and available to be the parent she needed. It wasn't until she was older that this anger turned into understanding and forgiveness. Another big moment of forgiveness was last October when former President Joe Biden formally apologized for the U.S. government's role in the Indian boarding school system.
His apology was straight up, you know, as the President of the United States, he apologized. But since I was kind of looking at some other stuff and noticed that the link to that apology on the White House website is gone. And I did inquire among several agencies, you know, what's up with this apology? Are you guys like not sorry anymore? What do you have to say about it? And I didn't get any response from anybody. And I contacted several people within the White House, within President Trump's press folks, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Department of the Interior. I even reached out to the Office of Army Cemeteries, which oversees Carlisle.
Pember says that despite the removal of the U.S. government's apology from the White House website, nothing can erase what Biden's words meant to her people.
I think for Native folks, you know, they heard the apology. It was a sincere apology from President Biden. At least President Trump has not officially stood up and taken it back. It's just sort of gone, you know, in this Orwellian kind of method that he seems to be operating his presidency. But I think that we still see it as an apology, and I think people are going forward with that thought.
Today, there's the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition, a national nonprofit which continues to address the ongoing trauma caused by this period. Marionette Pember's book, Medicine River, A Story of Survival and the Legacy of Indian Boarding Schools, is available now online and can be requested through your local bookstore. To find out more about our guest this week, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written and produced by Polly Hansen. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, what are your biggest regrets to date when Viewpoints returns?
It's Macy's Friends and Family Sale, which means if you're shopping for summer, you can get insider deals on our best brands, even ones that aren't usually on sale, like an extra 30% off Hugo Boss, Calvin Klein, Levi's, and more. Plus, get 15% off beauty and fragrance. And with Father's Day just around the corner on June 15th, it's a great time to shop for dad. Stop by Macy's today and walk out with the perfect gift. Don't miss Friends and Family. Ends Monday, only at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Here's comedians and Skechers getting comfortable, presented by hands-free Skechers Slip-ins.
Hey, I'm Bobby Slayton, and I'm here with my pal, comedian, and Skechers ambassador, Mr. Howie Mandel.
Why did it take so long to invent something as amazing as Slip-ins?
Maybe because all the inventors were focused on more important inventions, you know, like pet rocks and selfie sticks, and of course, seedless watermelons. You know, real important inventions.
But I know it seems simple, but it took Skechers to invent a better pair of shoes.
Yep. With Skechers Slip-ins, you just step it and go. You don't have to touch your shoes, and you do not have to bend down.
And we know how much you hate bending down.
Hey, careful, Howie. Family commercial. And by the way, Slip-ins are for the whole family. Men, women, and kids. In all your favorite Skechers styles, from sneakers to casual shoes to boots and even sandals.
See, that's what I love about Skechers. They don't discriminate on gender, age, or shoe orientation. Even sandals deserve the best technology. We've come a long way, Bobby, as a society.
Yeah, well, speak for yourself, Howie. And by the way, you can find Skechers Slip-ins at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
Do you ever wish you pursued a different career or went back to school or said yes to that trip you said no to? It's completely normal to look back and wonder, what if? Regrets, both small and big, happen at every stage of life and can center around work, relationships, major life decisions, and more. Some people may regret breaking up with a partner, while others regret getting back together.
It's an emotion that causes some amount of pain. And the pain is the stomach-churning feeling that we get when we look backward and say, oh, if only I hadn't made that decision. If only I hadn't taken that course. If only I hadn't not done that thing. And it's unpleasant, but it's also instructive.
That's Daniel Pink, an American writer based in Washington, D.C. Pink holds a law degree from Yale Law School and worked in politics and economic policy during his early career. In the 1990s, he was the chief speechwriter for Vice President Al Gore. Since then, he's continued writing but dabbles in several subjects. For a man who's accomplished so much in life, you'd think he'd have no regrets. But Pink says everyone has something they would change if they could go back.
The only people who don't have regrets are five-year-olds, people with brain damage, and sociopaths. The rest of us have regrets. It's one of the most common emotions that human beings experience, and it's one of the most common emotions, obviously, then that business people experience. And the reason it's so common is because it's useful if we deal with it right, if we deal with it right.
But some people explicitly choose not to deal with it. In recent years, there's been a growing philosophy around the mantra of no regrets. This mindset pushes continuous positivity, and the main idea is to keep moving forward and never look back. While some may embrace this kind of overly positive thinking, Pink thinks that people miss out on important life lessons if they never confront past mistakes.
Regret instructs, regret clarifies, regret points the way. And so a business leader who says, I have no regrets, is also a business leader saying, I don't learn anything. I'm not willing to improve. And that's why it's dangerous. Now, the key here, though, just to be fair, is that when we think about our regrets, we should not ignore them. That leads to delusion. But we shouldn't wallow in them either. We should confront them. And one of the things that bugs me about this no regrets philosophy, particularly in business, is that it is a false display of courage. We think that no regrets is a sign of how courageous we are, and it's not. Courage is staring your regrets in the eye and doing something about them.
Recognizing these failures is the first step. One way to do this is by writing or talking about how you're feeling. Try asking yourself, what mistake did I make? Why did I make that decision? And what thoughts are going through my head? The physical action of writing or talking to someone can help turn abstract emotions into something more concrete. This process of reflection also shows others a different side of you and that you're capable of growth.
We believe that when we disclose our mistakes or our vulnerabilities, people will think less of us. And there's 30 years of science telling us that's wrong. That in general, not in all cases, but in general, much more often than we think, when we disclose our vulnerabilities, people think more of us. They admire our genuine courage and they empathize with us.
From there, take this experience and turn it into a teaching lesson. Is it possible to fix the situation? If not, how can you learn from this mistake? Was it action or inaction that led you to feel this way? This type of reflection helps steer people away from making the same mistake twice. Pink himself wrote down a list of some of his biggest missteps.
When I looked at my mistakes and setbacks and failures, I found that a lot of them, and this might sound odd, but there really wasn't a lesson. It was just like, sometimes things don't work out. Sometimes there's randomness and bad luck and whatever, and that's life. However, there were other ones where the source of the screw up was so clearly me. And there were two big mistakes that I kept making over and over and over. And this failure resume, this reckoning with our regret, exposed that, and now I make those two mistakes a lot less.
He was also curious about how other Americans felt about regret. With the help of a data analytics company, he surveyed almost 4,500 people, asking them a variety of questions.
When I asked Americans the question about regret, without using that supercharged word regret, I got some interesting answers. So I asked people, how often do you look back on your life and wish you had done something differently? So I'm describing regret, but I'm not assigning it the R word. We found that 1% of people say they did that never. About 15%, 16% say they did it rarely. And 83% of Americans say, yeah, occasionally I do this. And actually about 40-something percent said they did it a lot. And so this is a very prevalent emotion, regret. And my research shows that research beginning in the 1980s showed that regret is one of our most common emotions. It is arguably our most common negative emotion. So it is ubiquitous. And the quantitative survey showed that very clearly.
And what were some of the biggest sources of regret? Pink got thousands of answers from people across the globe. Many were similar, so he organized them into four distinct categories. The first focuses on foundation.
These are people who might have health regrets, like not taking care of their bodies or smoking, but also financial regrets. I didn't save enough money, or even education regrets. I didn't work hard enough in school. Small decisions that somehow compromise the stability of your life. Another big regret were boldness regrets. If only I'd taken the chance. A lot of people regret not asking somebody out on a date or not starting a business or not speaking up. So boldness regrets are, if only I'd taken the chance. Moral regrets are, if only I'd done the right thing. You're at a juncture in your life. You can do the right thing. You can do the wrong thing. You do the wrong thing. Many of us, not all of us, but a heck of a lot of us regret that. So these are things like bullying, marital infidelity, other kinds of cheating. And then finally, we have connection regrets. This is if only I'd reached out. And these are these regrets that we were talking about earlier, of often of friendships and other relationships where the relationship drifts apart. People want to reach out. They think it's going to be awkward, so they don't do it. They think the other side's not going to care, so they don't do it. They drift further apart and they regret it.
Another interesting finding from the U.S. study was that there weren't many differences demographically. The biggest disparity was that regrets tied to what people didn't do increased with age.
When people are young, they tend to have equal numbers of action and inaction regrets. But as people age, inaction regrets take over. And I think it's because we can resolve some action regrets. We can, as we were talking about earlier, we can make amends. We can undo them. We can try to derive some sense from them, but inaction regrets gnaw at us for a very long time. And so the more we move on in our lives, the more that what really haunts us are regrets about what we didn't do. We didn't start that business. We didn't become an entrepreneur. We didn't ask that person out on a date. We didn't go on to visit some place that we've always wanted to visit. That's what sticks with us over the long haul.
And there are also actions or inactions that couldn't be fixed. These are called closed-door regrets.
For closed-door regrets, if you wrong somebody and that person is gone, there you can't undo that. You're stuck with that. What you can do, though, is use that as an engine for guiding your future behavior. You're never going to extinguish that, I don't think. But what you can do is you can take some of that pain and make sure that along with that pain, you're getting instruction. So what did this teach me? What does this tell me what to do next time?
It's important to remember that regret is just another emotion and a normal part of the human experience. The next time you feel that stabbing, overwhelming feeling of remorse, guilt, or failure, take note. Everyone makes mistakes, but it's what you do next that matters. To find out more about this topic and our guest, Daniel Pink, visit viewpointsradio.org. Also, check out his book, The Power of Regret, available online and in bookstores. This segment was written and produced by Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson. This segment is sponsored by Capital One. Banking with Capital One helps you keep more money in your wallet with no fees or minimums on checking accounts and no overdraft fees. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. Member FDIC.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
Progressive knows when you own a boat or RV, it's like you're automatically on vacation, even if you're actually a marriage counselor in the middle of couples therapy. But in your mind, you're camping in Acadia, puttering around Frenchman Bay. Your boat and RV are both protected, your lobster drenched in butter and... Uh-oh, did your clients just notice you weren't listening? Quick, do the thing where you just repeat back exactly what they said but as a question. They bought it. Now back to Maine, earning an automatic discount bundling your boat or RV with your home or auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Charmin Ultra Strong. You can use less, better than the rest. Charmin Ultra Strong. Your booty past the clean tech. Yeah. Salmon wave texture, it's the best. Study up, teach a lesson on fresh. Your booty past the clean tech.
Yes, sir.
Charmin Ultra Strong.
Charmin Ultra Strong with Diamond Weave Texture cleans better than the leading one-ply brand, so you can use less. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. Peak summer wedding season is here. Before walking down the aisle, more couples today are adding an extra item to their to-do list, premarital counseling. A survey conducted earlier this year by The Knot found that out of 17,000 engaged or just married couples, about a third went to couples therapy. For Gen Zers, this number is higher at nearly 40%. Once seen as a last-ditch effort to save a failing marriage, couples therapy is now viewed as a way to maintain a healthy and happy partnership. And it's not just about avoiding divorce. Many people say they don't want to repeat the patterns they saw in their parents' marriages. One upside is that therapy offers a neutral and supportive space to have difficult conversations about common relationship issues, like where money is being spent or how couples talk to each other in moments of conflict. Experts say that while premarital therapy can't fix a relationship, it can help couples gain their right tools as they move into this next chapter. And for a growing number of young people, it's becoming just as important as choosing a venue or what's on the wedding menu. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. The Final Destination franchise is a horror franchise that never really gets too scary. Instead of using tension and terror, Final Destination almost gleefully depicts death and its design ruthlessly terrorizing groups of overzealous teens who have somehow escaped death once before. The franchise's trademark is that these teens are then killed one by one, typically through long, convoluted, Rube Goldberg machine-like chain reactions that somehow lead to a shockingly violent outcome. While other horror franchises like The Conjuring or Friday the 13th seek to unsettle and scare its audiences, Final Destination is more like a gory horror version of a Where's Waldo book. What I mean is that half the fun of an FD movie is in the audience trying to predict which items in a given scene could deliver a cinematic kill and which character is next on death's list. If all of this sounds depraved and weird to you, then I can't dispute that. Final Destination is a bloody and disgusting movie franchise that nevertheless keeps packing theaters. The latest installment is called Final Destination Bloodlines, and it managed to gross more than $50 million in its opening weekend at the domestic box office. The movie begins with a long introduction set in the 1960s that just might be my favorite extended sequence in the entire franchise. And then it comes into the modern day, where we see a family hoping to outrun death's grasp. With the franchise's trademark glee in hand, Final Destination Bloodlines goes on to show just how difficult the task of escaping death can be. And honestly, it does all make for a pretty fun watch if you're into that kind of thing. I'm Evan Rook.
It's Macy's Friends and Family Sale, which means if you're shopping for summer, you can get insider deals on our best brands, even ones that aren't usually on sale, like an extra 30% off Hugo Boss, Calvin Klein, Levi's, and more. Plus, get 15% off beauty and fragrance. And with Father's Day just around the corner on June 15th, it's a great time to shop for dad. Stop by Macy's today and walk out with the perfect gift. Don't miss Friends and Family. Ends Monday, only at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
You ever try fixing your car and realize you're missing that one part? Yeah, been there. That's why eBay's my go-to. They've got millions of parts, guaranteed to fit. I'm talking brake pads for when yours have seen one too many miles of stop and go. Oil filters, because you don't mess around with your engine care. Even got this cold air intake on my watch list. I might just go for it. To keep the ride cool and your DIY streak hot. Find all the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
So, what's your boat? A boat for fishing, a boat for skiing, a pontoon boat for partying? Or are you thinking personal watercraft? Whatever floats fun for you, remember CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union, the leader in financing summer fun. Motorcycles, ATVs, campers, motorhomes, and convertibles too. Great rates, great service, great fun. Local lenders lending local money. Quick and easy loan approval. It's the way financing should be. Stop in and visit with a CCU lender today. CCU can set you up with great rate financing approval, so when you find your boat, you're ready to float. Summer's just too short not to enjoy every moment you can on the water, on the road, or off the road camping or ATVing. Stop in, call, or apply online at ccuwausau.com for your great rate. Whatever floats summer fun for you, remember CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union. We finance fun.
So, how are the kids?
Well, Emily made the honor roll.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah, we're really proud of her. Tyler, on the other hand, though.
What's going on?
He's been moody lately, just feeling down and not like himself.
Oh, we've been there. Nick was struggling last spring. He was so anxious and stressed.
Really? What helped?
Well, he joined the soccer team. And ever since, he's been a lot happier. He has more energy, he's less stressed, and he's definitely in a better mood at home. It's made a huge difference.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad he's getting out of the house, he's getting some exercise, and he's off his phone for once. It's been good for his mental health.
Sounds like it's been good for your mental health, too.
Participating in Wisconsin high school sports improves students' physical and mental health. Encourage your son or daughter to get involved. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio. WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. Intense fighting continues between Israel and Iran. Overnight, Israel carried out attacks on Iranian nuclear infrastructure, and Iran continued its retaliatory strikes. Israel's President Herzog speaking just outside Tel Aviv.
I call upon the leadership of the free world. You really want to de-escalate? Then enable us and work with us to get the nukes out of Iran.
The Iranian foreign minister responding through an interpreter.
We are defending ourselves as a reaction to aggression. If the aggression stops, naturally our responses will also cease.
And the BBC's Hugo Bachega reports he also said.
There was no point in continuing with those discussions while Israel carried out what he described as barbaric attacks on his country.
President Trump posting on Truth Social, we can easily get a deal done between Iran and Israel and end this bloody conflict. CBS News Special Report. I'm Stacey.